I'd never given much thought to how I would die. But dying in the place of someone I love seems like a good way to go. I can't bring myself to regret the decisions that brought me face to face with death. They also brought me to Edward.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Twilight Retrospective Series.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Hosted by Jacob.
You've done us a great service, Jacob. Thank you.
Stuart.
He's not as perfect as you think.
And Arnie.
I'm surprised he took a break from Jedi training.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
If we live through this, I'll follow you anywhere, woman.
Now you tell me.
Listener discretion is advised.
The only thing that can hurt me is you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on in, Bella. You won't bite.
Speak for yourself.
Today we're discussing the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, Part 2, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Billy Burke, Peter Facinelli, Elizabeth Reeser, Kellen Lutz, Nikki Reed, Jackson Rathborn, Ashley Green.
Are you reading the whole closing credits like at the end of this film?
Oh my god. With Michael Sheen and Dakota Fanning, directed by Bill Condon. This is the Now Playing co-host who is now hopelessly broken down, Arnie.
And Stuart breaking composure.
And this is the host who really does stink, Jacob.
Okay, finally we can talk Razzies. This series has been hated on for so long. I really thought that it won every year. Twilight movie, worst film of the year. But the Razzie committee kind of ignored this as a phenomenon. It started getting a few nominations with the second film. It was nominated for Worst Picture with Part 1 of Breaking Dawn and Eclipse. But this one is the quote-unquote winner. This thing took Worst Picture, Director, Actress, Supporting Actor, Taylor Lautner, Worst Couple, Taylor Lautner and the Baby, Sequel, Ensemble, everything but Script and Actor. And that's only because they hate Adam Sandler so much. He apparently made a movie called That's My Boy that is worse than this movie.
Oh boy, though, that one is worse than this. That one deserves all of this. Oh my god, that is one of Sandler's most painful.
That's contentious, though. To take it away from Pattinson and this script. This script? I mean, woo!
But hey, this did also win Best Shirtless Performance at the MTV Movie Awards for Taylor Lautner.
Is that what he strips for Charlie?
That was great. This movie is great. I'm just going to put it out there. This movie is wild. It's so funny that this is a part two, and it was like they were saving everything for this one. The blowout, I could not have seen coming. I read the book. I knew what was coming.
And you read the book. They finally changed something because Bill Condon said, I'm not doing a movie unless there's a big fight at the end.
That's not in the book?
Nope. We'll talk about it when we get there. But yeah, that fight is a huge surprise.
There are a lot of surprises here, including the fact that they couldn't afford the effects that they needed to pull this movie off.
No, they keep getting Phil Tippett's studio, which, look, I watched Mad God, this stop motion thing he's been working on for like 30 years. That finally made it to, I think, Shudder. It's interesting. It's creative. But yeah, it's an art project. It's not someone that you would expect to run this huge effects studio doing these big effects movies.
Yeah. This movie is Harry Potter money. It's just worth pointing out. Like, they finally hit domestically $300 million with this son of a bitch. And I'm stunned.
Yeah. Deathly Hallows 2 broke the record for midnight viewings, which was held by Breaking Dawn Part 1, and then Part 2 came along and broke that record. And it should be said, they could have made more money. They talked about doing this one in 3D. None of these have been done in 3D. That's a thing at this time. They thought that would be cool. 3D is the extra perspective that Bella has now that she's a vampire. But Bill Condon's like, I'm only doing it in 3D if we shoot it in 3D. It can't be a post-production job. And they're like, no, we're not putting the money up for that. So they ditched the 3D.
We're not putting any money in this. We're not even going to give you money for wolf effects or vampire effects.
They've never gone this hard.
They haven't needed them as badly as this movie will need them. And that is the stunner here. That I don't know if I've ever seen a movie that's grossed so much that had so little to work with. But I guess Blair Witch Project, maybe. But oof. I knew what was coming, and yet I still was not prepared. Arnie, why don't you give him a plot for part two?
Bella has given birth to an impossible child. No vampire is supposed to be able to impregnate a human, but Edward and Bella did it. Bella died in childbirth, but Edward turned her into a vampire in the nick of time. Now awake, she's able to meet her daughter, Renesmee.
Just call her Nessie. I don't care if Bella doesn't like it. That's how I always refer to her, as Nessie.
And none too pleased that werewolf Jacob has imprinted on Nessie.
Who would be?
Meaning for the rest of his life, he'll be devoted to the youngster.
He's in love with a baby.
Yeah, he's going to be creeping around the cradle and I'm supposed to be cool with it? No, she's mad about Nessie? Jesus Christ, get your priorities in line.
Though how long Nessie may be young is in question, as she's aging rapidly. Nessie is mistaken for a child vampire, and vampires turning children is illegal. This garners the attention of vampire ruling group the Volturi. Volturi leader Aro decides to take the Volturi warriors to kill the child and any involved in its creation. To protect their daughter, Edward and Bella, aided by the rest of the Cullen family, gather witnesses and warriors to first try to prove to the Volturi that no law was broken, but if it comes to it, go to war against the Volturi. The group is backed up by the muscle of the werewolves. The Volturi eventually arrive. When Aro finds out that the now walking, talking Nessie isn't a child vampire, the Volturi leader still contemplates going into battle to kill the insubordinate vampires and wolves. But he wusses out, afraid for his own life, so he has the Volturi retreat. And we're told Bella and Edward and their immortal daughter will live happily together forever, as credits roll.
They better hope they're happy, because it is forever, but like, I wouldn't be happy from the first seconds of this romance. She wakes up red-eyed, just like we left her, and gives Edward a bear hug that crushes him, and he's like, oh, I'm the one with the broken ribs now, and we're the same temperature. Like, that's a hallmark for vampires. We're the same temperature now.
We're both cold.
Yeah, I love it. This is funny right out the gate. Arnie, you last time, I think rightfully poo-pooed that it isn't funny scene after scene. This movie is off the rails from start to finish. Starting right here.
It teeters on the rails a lot, I agree. I didn't find that line as funny. I was perhaps a bit distracted during the first few minutes of this, because, you know, as the credits start, Rami Malek is in this? Mr. Robot is going to pop up somewhere in here?
Yeah, this is before he's Mr. Robot, before he's Freddie Mercury. This is when he's still playing the Pharaoh in Night at the Museum.
Yeah, so I was just, I'll admit, a little bit stunned and kind of waiting for him. So yes, during this opening scene, I might not have laughed as hard as I planned to, but certainly I do find it amusing when she is rightfully yelling at Jacob for imprinting on that baby.
Even before that, we gotta go hunting. Remember that whole thing about newborns? They're out of control. Like, we gotta get her some food. Put on your finest dining gown to go hunting in the woods. She's got, like, her sexy blue dress on.
I mean, I can't. Yeah, you were waiting for Rami Malek to show up. I'm waiting for Sonic the Hedgehog to show up. I mean, they're running up these mountains, and she smells the rock climber or whatever. Oh my fucking God, I am busting a gut. Pause the tape. I gotta take a minute.
Yeah, and because Bella is just the greatest thing ever, she's not tempted by humans, even though she's a newborn. She blows Edward away by overcoming that, and you think she's gonna get a deer, but no, maybe this is commentary because she's older than Edward now forever. Like, she's the cougar, but she's gonna take out a cougar to feed on.
I didn't read metaphor in them, and maybe there's something there. I can't quite figure out what's there, other than the fact that I think audiences would be rightfully horrified, right? If you were a fan of this book, 10 minutes into this, you'd be steaming, just furious that this is what happened to your book. I can't imagine fans were pleased to see this level of cheese.
I understand Kristen Stewart these days is a very good actress. I've seen her in a couple performances I greatly respect. So I'm not damning the person. I'm going to damn the performance here, though, because she's been not great in these movies as the underdog human wannabe vampire. But now that she's got vampire powers, her performance reminded me of something that I'd get from Grace Jones or something, with the whipping of the head.
Aren't you appreciating the subtlety? She was all crouched before when she's human, and now she's got good posture. Like, this is what they would talk up. This is what they thought was super smart to tell you about her transformation, was her posture.
Well, she's standing up straighter because she got that big paycheck for that fifth movie she wasn't signed for.
Yes.
Yeah, they got extra money for this. To be fair, I think even Stephanie Meyer admits that it was difficult for her to conceive Bella in this way. That everything for her was about leading up to being turned. And now that she is a vampire, it's not as easy to connect with her. The audience is going to probably lose, which is maybe why she kills a bobcat and not a deer, because we would want to see the deer live or something. Like, there's just a lot of problems now that she's a vampire and audience empathy. She's acting like this. She's looking like this. This is not the heroine that we were supposed to have liked for the last four movies. No one's going to like this one at all.
Now that you've said that, I think you're right. The best way to end the saga would be Edward sinks his teeth into Bella. Bella looks into the camera, her eyes turn, and credits roll, and that's the end. And we just imagine what that would be like. Instead of having it happen during a bad childbirth.
But this is really X-Men, right? Like, even the effects guys on the extras were like, we get introduced to all these different superpowers. They're like, we wanted to try to make it feel more vampire than mutant was their word, but I knew what they meant. This is X-Men now.
It is, but it isn't. I mean, I know what you're saying, but I still feel like there's a lot of identifiability with the way that mutants are persecuted in an X-Men movie. No impressionable young girl is going to relate to their heroine now leaping up mountains. Again, they're not even brave enough to show what's happening, but like, yeah, she's ripping into the necks of bobcats. This is just absurd. And I love the fact that Jacob is trying to like make nice now of like, oh, you're a great looking couple. I'm so glad you got married and all of that. I'm dating your baby.
Can we talk about this baby, Nessie? Like, I feel like Bella's a very negligent mother. I don't see her spending a lot of time around this newborn. Like, the first thing she don't feed the baby, she goes and feeds.
Did you see this baby? This baby's the creepiest baby ever put on film.
What's going on with the baby? We need to talk about this. Why have they superimposed a face on a baby rather than just have a goddamn baby?
Yeah, so here's the thing. They hired the 8-year-old Nessie, and they're like, we gotta make all the different variations, the 3-month-old, the 1-year-old, the 5-year-old, look like this actress. Just hire different babies and stuff that look like her, right?
Right! Hire a baby!
But instead, they're like, no, we got this great technology. We can do it now. We have the technology. We can rebuild her! And like, yeah, they would project the actresses that they hired for the 8-year-old version, like her features onto these newborn babies, that face is floating around. It's like cats before cats.
They did try an animatronic baby. There are pictures you can see online of this animatronic baby they had, and they decided that was too creepy. And admittedly, it looked like fucking child's play.
Yeah, they called it Chuck Esme instead of Red Esme because it looked like Chucky. And here's the thing. I wouldn't have known about this unless one of our listeners pointed it out on our Facebook page, because this has been excised from the extras. There's no mention of an animatronic baby. There's just a little YouTube clip that I always pointed to. I don't even know if that's real, but I believe it is. And like, they have erased that from the lore of Twilight.
No, it makes perfect sense, because now that I see that and then see that they have pasted some baby face over this animatronic abomination.
No, they're pasting it over real babies at this point. They ditched the whole robot.
Are you sure? Because I think they took a Gerber ad and just stole that face and put it on an animatronic body.
Well, here's the thing. They erased a lot of the real baby because babies don't pay attention to direction. And so they were like, we need its shoulders turned this way. We need its head to do this. We need its eyes. So yeah, they had a real baby on the set. And yeah, they would erase half of it because they had to have the body language doing something else.
It's terrible.
And I just want to say, if the thought is we're going to be more comfortable with Taylor Lautner dating an 8-year-old than an infant, that's not working.
That is just so wrong that really at this point you kill Jacob in this scene. You just kill him and you protect your baby and you prevent a Lifetime movie about Nessie coming 18 years from now.
Yeah, for whatever reason, Bella, you're right, she's supposed to be rage-filled newborn. What's setting her off is that the nickname is like the Loch Ness Monster, but not that my best friend and the guy that was after me this whole time has now predatorily gone after my newborn. That's insane. And again, I feel for this production because they know it's weird. They sort of tried to help it out, but then again, the thought that we have this montage of what Nessie's going to grow up to look like and that she will eventually be an adult, but then they try to superimpose that face on the baby just makes it even more grotesque. They shoot themselves in the foot by trying to say, don't think pedophilia.
Now I'm not so upset with Clint Eastwood giving Bradley Cooper that doll in American Sniper. That doesn't look so bad now compared to this CGI monstrosity.
Creepiest baby I've ever seen, right here in this movie. Here it is.
And I wish they just leaned more into that in the book. It's kind of creepy because this baby's already talking and it's learning multiple languages. And they could have done some really unsettling stuff with this toddler, like having full-on adult conversations with you.
It's creepy enough, Jacob. I don't need any more for the nightmare juice. It's a full glass and I just can't even. And it just doesn't end. All of a sudden, like, Bella, it's your birthday. Let's buy you this cabin in the woods that's like Pottery Barn perfect, except they have like black candles in the nursery and there's like all these Dracula touches.
You're not going to need that crib in 5 minutes. Baby's going to be too big.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, and it's all with a bed. The whole point is, I thought the whole thing that Bella had to give up was the pleasures of the mortal sexual life. And here they are, they're going to be vampires and still having sex. She's only better now. She's super strong and doesn't have any of the detriments of being a vampire and gets to have sex. What was the loss?
What made you think they couldn't have sex? I knew the other vampires were having sex.
Because the last movie told us newborns are dangerous. They're uncontrollable. They're going to go crazy. And she thinks for half a second to eat a mountain climber, but that's it.
She delayed becoming a vampire because she wanted to have sex. That's why.
As a human, but I mean, we knew she was going to be able to have sex as a vampire.
Then why did she wait? Because she can't have sex like that as a vampire.
Except the older step-siblings are obviously fucking.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't know what they're into. I don't know what they like. They creep me out. We never have understood Emmett, and I never want to.
No, I never thought vampires couldn't fuck, and that's why I didn't understand why she wasn't a vampire on the honeymoon.
Yeah, because she wanted to know what it felt like as a human. At least she says that in the book. I don't know if that ever comes through in the movies.
Yes, this is PG-13 still, somehow, surprisingly. So the nuances of vampire sex per human vampire sex go unexplained. So the plan is now, you've adjusted well. We're going to have to tell Charlie something. Your dad is waiting by the phone thinking you're still on honeymoon with the flu, and we need to tell him you're dead. And it is Jacob who decides that Charlie can handle it. And we get this hilarious scene.
Well, Jacob is such a snitch in those books. He's always going to Charlie. Oh, Bella got a motorcycle, and now Bella's doing this. But yeah, this scene here. Again, losing it in the theater when I watched this.
Incredible. Like, I need to tell you something and then stripping down to your underwear. I mean, this is crazy.
Yes.
This scene has to be intentionally funny, right? Because there's no way
that
this isn't played for laughs.
I mean, they knew they had to go funny with it.
Yeah. It's still unintentionally funny. But yes, I think they did think that we would laugh at the awkwardness of Charlie realizing this. But it's just, yeah, it just plays like bad farce. And because Jacob is a werewolf, I can't figure out how much does Charlie understand about vampires? He will come over to the house.
I don't think he knows anything because they tell him Bella's not a werewolf, but they just say she's something else now. They're not going to tell her. They're just going to present him with this baby that's a newborn that's like 6 months old.
That they've adopted.
Right, yes. I think the truth of the matter is, if he were to hear that his daughter married a vampire, then he would be cutting down trees and making stakes, right? He would be getting crucifixes and holy water, and he would be the villain of this story. He would be the one killing them.
What's said is that if you tell him that they are vampires, the Volturi are going to come after you because you can't reveal vampires.
To one person? That seems really over the top. You're telling me that, I mean, again, they have human secretaries. I don't know why her dad can't know.
I'm just parroting what this fucking movie said. I'm not defending it.
Yeah, I know. But we get this scene where they're trying to coach Bella to try to remember how to be human. She has to put in contact. She has to remember to look like she's breathing.
Got a slouch.
Yes, I know. Her that made me laugh. Yeah, that is her performance. If you aren't slouching, you aren't Kristen Stewart. And again, I can't tell what passes by. I will say this. I feel for Billy Burke. I really do feel like his character is the most enjoyable in this yep. movie. He's the only one that I actually think is doing a good job.
Actually acting?
Yeah. I actually feel like he really tries here, but is ultimately defeated by the material and pretty much gone from the rest of this movie. You don't really need this scene because alive or dead, Charlie doesn't matter.
Well, they send him on a fishing trip as a Christmas gift because there's going to be a big war going on. So I guess they want him out of town.
Right. He seemed like he was so important because he would be the sheriff and would be so connected with the goings-on and the crimes of the town. And Charlie has never meant anything. Bella might as well live on her own. And she loves being a vampire. I mean, again, she's arm wrestling, like all of this stuff. I mean, you've got to be laughing, right?
I'm dumbfounded at the arm wrestling. I'm like, what exactly are they trying here? Oh, of course, Bella is always the perfect one. So now she is the strongest vampire, despite the fact that this other vampire looks like he lifts all day, every day. She beats him in arm wrestling.
It's because she's a newborn. That gives you more power that first year.
Okay.
But I gotta say, like, again, these films, I feel like they've been pretty hip with their music. They're really tapping into the alt music scene. We're gonna get some Green Day in this one. But during this arm wrestling scene, it is this cheesy, like, 80s guitar solo stuff. And yeah, it really exemplifies how silly it is.
And again, what's the fight at this point? The Volturi know about it. Last movie, it seemed like they were going to come and get the baby, but that's not the issue now. They send, like, a necklace or something. There's no villains. They killed Victoria. They killed all the bad vampires. The child's fine. Bella's better than ever before. They literally have exhausted all conflicts. They have to manufacture something here with Irina. That one of those blondes that attended the wedding last movie.
Maggie Grace from Lost.
Did you ever get the fact that she dated Laurent?
Yeah, there was a mention of it in the last movie, but again, if it hadn't been Maggie Grace, I wouldn't have paid any attention. She's also the daughter in all of the Taken films.
Not seen a one. Didn't watch Lost, didn't see this. She didn't stand out to me as someone to pay attention to. It feels really random to me that they're retconning that, oh, the black guy that was hanging out with the really bad vampires, who seemed like a nice guy, but then at some point decided to kill Bella, was the boyfriend of this chick, and because a werewolf killed him, she is going to freak out that werewolves are now hanging out with Bella and this newborn child. And she's going to be creating the problem where there are no problems for the second half of this movie.
We'll find out she's from the Denali clan, and they're going to have a history with immortal children. She believes that's what Nessie is. As Nessie, is this just really stylish in slow motion, or is she floating in the sky as she's catching snowflakes on her hand?
She flew up like Superman.
Wow, that's crazy. She's just flying now.
I mean, again, we can't have a scene that doesn't have something patently absurd happen in this one. I mean, last time you had to wait for it. They doled it out every 10 minutes. But here, I promise you, every scene is dumbfounded.
Yeah, Irina sees Nessie floating in the sky, I guess, and has to go to the Volturi personally, books a flight to Italy to tell them they made it an immortal child. These are very dangerous things.
And Arnie, do you understand this about the immortal child? They try to handle it in flashback, and I feel for people that don't know how it was described in the book.
I mean, I got it that they're saying they made a vampire child, and that's illegal because the vampire children would never age, and so that's what they're being reported as having done.
Yeah, and by vampire child, you mean like a baby that was turned into a vampire. That's what they believe Nessie is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem with it is not that it will never age. The problem with it is that when children haven't matured into at least a teenager, 17, 18 years old, then they're going to kill entire villages. We don't really see that. We just see a village burning in a flashback.
We see a baby with some blood on its mouth and some bodies.
But we're expected to believe that this 3-year-old went to town on an entire medieval village, which would have been fun to see, but there's only so much stupid I can handle.
For any scene that allows Michael Sheen to make an appearance, I'm all for.
He is chewing on the scenery here.
So much fun.
He knows what movie he's in, and I think he's the only one who knows.
Yeah, he realizes the performance he should have been doing in Underworld, and he's doing it here.
Yeah, he's doing both series. That's got to be hard.
I'm guessing this one paid more.
He is like a real good actor. I will just say, like Frost Nixon or something. Like, just do yourself a favor and see something where he's good in it. Some dry British thing.
No, go see Tron. He's wonderful in Tron in this way.
He's the best part of Tron.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a great movie. I haven't seen it, but I guess I'll see it for him. But yes. Okay, so the conflict is the Volturi have been misinformed.
Fake news.
Easily resolved. You told me that there is a baby that got bit, and the truth is Bella, who I thought they knew, gave birth to a baby.
That's only if you watch that mid-credit scene, though.
Okay.
Even with Marvel, half the time, they retcon those scenes.
I mean, it wasn't even in the extended cut. That was in the regular cut, that mid-credit scene.
No, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, well then, yeah. They really led you to believe that Michael Sheen knew about the baby and wanted that baby, and now they're acting like he has no idea that Bella created this and thinks she did it by illegal means that are barely explained.
I guess here's their out, is that the Volturi, it's ultimately about power. They have all these rules, but they're willing to waive them if they could get someone with a good power to join their side. So this end confrontation ultimately is they don't care about that baby. It's about getting Edward or Bella or powerful vampires on their team.
I really wondered, because the book really late in the game, last 100 pages, suddenly throws in that there are no joke 30 new characters.
Yeah, all these vampires come out. I'm like, what is going on?
And you know them by name and you're trying to tell powers and all that. I'm like, there's no way they're going to try to do that in this.
That's the first half of this film.
And sure enough, the act two of part two is the Cullens going around the world and calling on all their friends to come and stand by them and say that Bella's baby isn't an immortal child.
Don't you wish they leaned into this more? Like, look, ethnic stereotypes are not fun, but this isn't going to try to go deep. So, like, you have your Irish vampires. I want them to do something with potatoes.
No, I definitely did. I definitely wanted every grotesque cultural reference that they could for all of these vampires.
I wanted more countries. I wanted French vampires. I wanted the United Nation of Vampires to show up.
This is starting to feel like what we do in the shadow. So it is surprising that we don't get those jokes. That we have Irish vampires rolling in. I'm waiting for the punchline that never comes.
Egyptian vampires. Here you go, Arnie. You get to talk about Rami Malek as an Egyptian elemental controlling vampire.
I realized something when watching this. I was watching this movie and I was petting my puppy. Rami Malek has the eyes of a French bulldog. He has the little under bags and everything. I can't believe that. But yes, he is here, and very interesting performance, very different than what I've seen in James Bond and Mr. Robot.
Maybe go watch Night at the Museum. This feels more like when he's playing the Pharaoh. It was funny seeing him on the extras where he's like, yeah, I have to come up with all these hand motions, but since it's CG, I don't know what's going on. And then you get these shots of him making hand motions with no, like, water to manipulate. It's hilarious.
I still don't know what's going on, even after they add the effects. So the point is, his dad doesn't want to get involved, and he takes water from the pool and blocks his exit, as if you couldn't walk through water. And that's going to mean that the Egyptians are going to join the side. Again, all of this, there's no conflict here. You've been misinformed. This child is fine, and you don't need to kill it.
Yeah, Stuart, what they say is they need witnesses. They just need people to testify. We're going to get a court case, I guess, for the climax of this film.
Witnesses that weren't there for the birth of the baby, so they're not very good witnesses.
But if Nessie touches you, you will see those memories of what happened.
Oh, Nessie is touching me. Every time we see that computer-generated face and all the people, the actors that have to be like, oh my God, she's magical. This is great.
Yeah, that CGI hand that will come out awkwardly from the bottom of the screen to touch him.
I thought that was some puppet hand from hell. But yes, the child is magical. Not all magic is good magic. There is evil magic, and I think that baby is magical.
But again, you'd think just a couple, get an Irish one, get a Egyptian one, and get the Denali clan, and we're good. But no, we just keep going through Amazonians.
Amazonians. Did they go too far with this depiction of the Amazonians?
Yes.
Oh my, I feel like, yeah, a lot of cultural insensitivities going on with some of these costumes.
I mean, everything. Yeah. The Amazonians, they can make you believe you're in the rainforest when you're not. Again, are these helpful powers?
Well, they could change what you see. Later on, one's going to make one blind because they control your sight.
Oh, yes. Although that wasn't really very helpful, but yes.
No. None of these powers are the electrical powers. I don't know. Half of these vampires don't even have powers, it seems.
But Bella does. It's worth pointing out that she is learning that, as if we didn't know this already, she has the power to cockblock. Like, whatever you want to do to her, she could just go zoink and just nothing gets to her.
Yeah, she's got shields. The reason you can never read her mind, Edward, is because she's real defensive. She's got that, not the offensive role-playing game powers, but the defensive ones.
The ones that suck to play.
Yeah, and so the one that can shock Kate, what she does is she'll zap Edward, and it really forces Bella to get good at this so that she can protect her vampire.
Yeah, she's got to learn to project those shields over everyone.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, again, they keep adding, there's Romanian, I think they're the comic relief.
I like those ones. See, the thing is, there's some interesting backstories. I like the Romanians' backstory, like, they, like, almost turned to stone because they just existed so long. There's interesting things, but it's just being thrown at you in the second act of the final film, and just like the book, it's too much.
It is a lot to take in. It's montage style. I'm trying to keep up, but fortunately, they all look so different that it's easy to do, but I was doubly stunned when some of these come up looking like they do. The Amazonians did feel, you know, they weren't great to Native Americans in that first movie, but now they're looking real bad by comparison.
And you have recognizable names here, too. Lee Pace, well, he was what, Ronan in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and he pops up and stuff. He's a fairly big name, and he just does some bit about taking out a new wave punk in London. He'll fall in love with Kate. But why did these people sign on to this? Is it just because they wanted to have a big check?
I mean, you asked about Dakota Fanning when she showed up.
Right. Yeah. Why are people like that signing on to do nothing? Bryce Dallas Howard. If you sign someone like that, you're going to give them a part worthy of that. I just feel like maybe they were lied to. Maybe they were told that they're going to have this amazing storyline, and then it ends up being 2 minutes.
Maybe he did it for his niece.
Yeah, can't discount that either. I mean, there is the idea that sometimes, you know, it's better than recording a children's album. I'd much rather you do a kid's movie I never see than, yes, sing. But anyway, yes, it's a whole lot of people for very little effect, so that we can have a showdown in which they're all going to say, oh yeah, we totally think this child is not an immortal child.
And as all these vampires are gathering together, I thought for sure this would have been cut from the book. In the book, there's this whole thing about getting fake IDs. You can just have fake IDs show up or not do it at all, because it doesn't matter. But no, they do the Jay Jakes whole subplot in this. I couldn't believe it.
Talk about another actor. This one is Jack Ryan's boss on the Amazon series.
Wendell Pierce, yeah. Again, another big name in my mind. A big enough name that he doesn't need to do this. And yes, this Merchant of Venice. She was so proud of these allusions and references in the book. They spent about 100 pages about Bella looking in copies of Merchant of Venice to find this man who can make fake IDs. And it all boils down to the fact that we're supposed to believe that she thinks Alice doesn't think she's going to live.
Yeah, because Alice has disappeared at this point.
There's only passports for Jacob and the baby. And yeah, I'd be worried about that too. I don't want them fleeing to another country. But because there is none for Edward or Bella, Alice, the future seer, must think that they don't live. I don't buy it. And it's, again, it's just not very suspenseful. I do agree Bella needs to be doing something, but this is not it.
No.
And I think running off to Seattle to get passports is a pretty lame way to build up to the climax.
The fact that vampires need passports is lame right there.
Well, they gotta have fake names. I don't know. It makes sense.
If you really want to get logistic about it, but by the same token, these are immortals. They really need to have a broker for all of this documentation. They don't have it set.
And apparently he's been working with Jasper for 20 years, and knows something's up, but I don't think he knows that they're vampires. He's just like, he looks well preserved.
He's a lawyer. You pay him money. It's all confidential to him.
Looking the other way. Yeah.
Yes. But then we get the climax. And when I went to go see this in theaters, I didn't know anything about what to expect. Barely remember the previous films, so I'm not connecting things. But yes, we get this big climax. It's supposed to be in a snowy field. It's obviously like a soundstage. It's so awkward looking.
But I'm excited. I've been tepid on the movie thus far. I have definitely been laughing at it at points. I've also just been kind of confounded for the past 20 minutes of the movie as they do this witness roundup. But I'm like, oh shit, we're going to end in a Lord of the Rings-like massive battle here. That's awesome. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, so let's describe it as it plays out. Alice finally shows up. She goes to Aro, he's looking for a reason to fight. He's not accepting anything. He wants to fight because he wants to take vampires to add to his guard that have good powers. So a fight breaks out, and I'm watching this in the movie theater, not knowing anything about Twilight, and Carlisle gets beheaded, and I'm like, oh shit. It is on. I can't believe they just did that. I respect this franchise now. You went somewhere that no other franchise would go by beheading one of the major characters right off in this battle. Mind blowing.
One of them. This thing becomes like the crash test dummies. I mean, heads are just popping off
Yes. Everywhere
by the end of this fight. It's hysterical. Yeah, Dakota Fanning gets it. I think one of the werewolves gets it. There were people that I think were supposed to be important I barely paid attention to.
Yeah.
Heads are popping everywhere, so maybe you knew who they were.
It's PG-13, there's no blood, because I guess they're vampires, but I can't believe heads are ripping off, arms are ripping off. We're going to see a werewolf die, and it's really sad because we just associate it with like a puppy dog. But then, I got to ask, and I'm glad this wasn't spoiled in the book. This is the biggest change from the novels. They don't have this, what's going to be a fake out, but Stuart, you read the book, and Arnie, you didn't. Did you guys see this coming, or were you just accepting we have just kicked off this huge battle?
I was perfectly good with this huge battle. I'm like, this makes sense. It's the last of the books. Kill a few characters that you've come to love along the way. Just have fun with it. And yeah, I was completely down with this. I wasn't down with the effects.
No, that adds to the humor. Rami Malek hitting the ground and, yeah, it cracking open. It's hilarious looking.
Oh, yeah, the ground pound. But they keep beheading the vampires and then setting them on fire.
Yeah, that's always been the method to kill them.
And if you don't set them on fire, will the head grow back?
Unclear. I think you set them on fire to make sure they stay dead. I guess the arms and head can maybe be reattached somehow if you don't.
I mean, who's going to do that surgery? I can't imagine. But yeah, it could be fun.
Stuart, did you think this was a major change after having read the novel?
I thought that Stephanie Meyer finally might have a reason to complain. It doesn't feel in spirit of what she wanted to do. She wanted to have this pacifist ending, and here's Hollywood saying, rip the heads off.
Well, yeah, Condon is like, we have to have some kind of battle. We can't have it end in almost a literal chess game like in the book where it's all just talking it out.
No, you couldn't. This is great.
Well, even in chess, you're theoretically killing pieces. It's not bloody, but you are taking people out of the equation.
Yeah, but in that novel, it's Bella like, I gotta concentrate and shield these people harder. It's not exciting. And then you get the reveal. This is all just a vision that Alice has given Aro of the future if they decide to fight. And I remember, I'm like, this is the most Mormon-ass part of this film because this takes me back to every Mormon girl I dated, just cock tease, getting hot and heavy, and then it's like, oh, we gotta stop, can't go that far. I could not believe this. I went from such a high, having respect for this film, for being willing to kill people, major characters, to fuck you, movie, fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes! That is my exact reaction, is this battle is happening, and I'm like, well, this is an easy recommend. Absolutely. I mean, the effects aren't that great, but damn, I can't believe they went there. After 5 movies, they've given something totally different and unexpected. Fuck you, movie! Fuck you!
And they even said, like, in the extras, they're like, yeah, we've come up with this new thing, and it might really upset people. But of course, Stephanie Meyer's happy because she's like, I don't want people to die because I might do more books and I need them.
And so because they might make those movies, although enough time has passed at this point.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting more Twilight books.
Yeah, they would just redo the whole saga, even if she were to write them. They go with this lame-ass thing, which is that Alice went to Brazil and got this Nahul to say, hey, I'm 150 years old. I stopped growing when I was 7, but I'm just like Renesmee.
Yeah, Brazilian natives, and again, is this culturally appropriate attire?
It's certainly not appropriate for the season. I mean, the snow is out. You don't go in your thong, right?
Well, they're vampires. They don't get frostbite, right?
Yeah, they don't feel the snow. And ironically, this was the hottest scene for them to film because they're in the soundstage and people were sweating the whole time.
Anyway, I just want to point out he is from the Tucuna tribe in Brazil.
Remember that maid from the last film?
Yeah, she was from the same tribe and they went on honeymoon right off the coast of Rio. So I'm thinking maybe what looked like her being mortified, maybe she's the secret supporter. Maybe she just knew about Nahul.
Yeah, he's also a half vampire, half human, like Nessie, but he's 150 years old at this point. But you mature by 7, so Jacob just doesn't need to do creepy stuff until she's 7 years old, I guess. The whole time as I'm watching this with my girls and my wife, like my wife is like, that's what groomers say. That, oh, she's got an old soul. She's so smart for age. She's like, that's what groomers say. Like, she was, yeah, did not like it.
Yeah, I don't know who wouldn't be saying that. I mean, some of those conspiracies are crazy, but I think anyone would be uncomfortable with this being passed as normal. But, you know, I've said it enough that this shouldn't be.
And my question was, even though the body is aging fast, it still takes time and experience for the emotions and the intellect to advance. So
yeah,
you're going to have a 7-year-old in the body of a 25-year-old. That's still not a great thing.
Well, she was talking by the time she was 3 weeks.
We see her playing the piano here. Perhaps that's telling us that she's emotionally mature too? I don't know.
The obvious thing would have been to kill Jacob, right? To take the choice off the table.
Have him die while they're with the Volturi, somehow.
But the second obvious thing would be to, yes, give him another romance. Have him move on from Bella. This was just a very weird-ass way of doing it.
He can't move on now. He's imprinted. You can't unimprint.
Yeah. It is kind of Wuthering Heights, but I think the Brontes would be pretty upset with this book. I think we're all pretty upset with this book.
Yeah.
And so everyone just goes home. All right, no fight. And you can keep the kid. Although, I will say this. I think Irina is dead.
Yes, they did kill her before Alice showed up.
So there was one true beheading. That woman who testified that this was an immortal child did have her head ripped off.
Because she was wrong, she spread fake news, they killed her.
Right. And her sisters that were upset were trying to go and get vengeance, but the Amazonians made them blind, and I guess they just never got to the Volturi. All right. Happy ending for everyone.
And we're back to that field that we kept going to in the earlier films where we first saw Edward all twinkling as they laid there. And now Bella, she's removing those defensive shields so he could finally read her mind and we could have flashbacks to all the movies as he sees those memories.
Nobody has ever loved anyone as much as Bella loves Edward. And to prove it, we get a clip reel.
And this song, God damn them, this song's been in my head for 3 days now. I've loved you for 1,000 years. I'll love you for 1,000 more. Oh, my fucking God.
What I'm upset with, they're in a field. There is sunlight. We see sun hitting their skin. I want to see some shine. I want to see some sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
They have forgotten that. And that is some of the key iconography for Twilight. Like, how great would it be, like, two sparkling people making out at the end?
I think her hair sparkles a little bit, but maybe that's just the prel.
I think maybe they shied away from that because that was seemingly the battle cry of the anti-Twihards.
I mean, watch this and you got a whole new battle cry.
Right, you've given them more ammunition than you've defended. But this is where we can really, yes, lay on thick all of the pageantry. We see everyone and every contributor of the saga appear here in the credits. It goes black and white, so it'll mirror the print in the book and they're flipping pages.
Well, they literally show a page at the end where they say forever. Again, to me, that is the symbolism of their devotion to sticking to the pages in the book, that they'll just show pages at the end of this film. But yeah, this is a real Peter Jackson moment where he had every character from the Lord of the Rings trilogy appear at the end credits. They do that here.
These credits are overly self-congratulatory for a series that, my estimation, doesn't deserve to be patting itself on the back quite so much.
Sure, we could say that, but these made a ton of money. These broke records. They're a huge commercial success. Yeah, critics hated them. The Razzies hated them. I don't know. The Razzies, they always pick the popular thing to hate, not the actual worst thing. But these made a ton of money. I think you're allowed to do this kind of thing when every film has made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Agreed. I definitely think that they had people that were cheering them on, even though apparently none of them were on this podcast.
I mean, I think we're cheering at times, but maybe for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, let's find out how much we're cheering.
Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Breaking Dawn Part Dos? Jacob.
Again, I'm laughing throughout this, from the awful CGI baby, which is just horrific every time, to the awful ethnic stereotypes of all the different vampires coming from around the world. I hope people watch this before they listen, because the shock of finding out about that fight scene, that it is a huge cock block, that it is fake, that you are left with fucking blue balls and in pain, that is an emotion you need to feel when you watch this film. I recommend going through that struggle, but hopefully this hasn't been spoiled for you when you're listening to this.
It cannot be overstated. What Jacob is saying is absolutely right. The shock and horror that it was all a fucking tease.
But that's so Bella. That is so Bella.
It is. That's what I'm saying. It's so Mormon. Just, I don't know, maybe a lot of religious girls are uptight, but I've been with the Mormon ones, and except besides one or two, yes, a lot of cock teasing going on. But yeah, this is, again, it's a wild film. It's bizarre. I think that's like Twilight. Yeah, you want to talk shit about it, it's easy to do because sparkly vampires, but let's go a level deeper. Let's really know. And I think it's worth the dive into this to see what is the phenomena about and how crazy does this get. It's, again, not a Green Arrow, but yeah, see this movie.
Stuart.
I can finally get on board with you, Jacob, here. This is cray-cray in a way that you need to see. If you like bad movies, Brown Arrow. Never a green. Never, ever, ever a green.
No.
But Brown Arrow, amazing. This is from start to finish, too, which is a rarity. Most bad movies are only bad in little fits and starts. And this one is pretty much from the very first moment of Bella trying to get the mountain climber to the mannequin heads exploding. And everything in between, including the shirtless hunk trying to, like, date the baby and all of this. It is so crazy. And you're right. I thought Twilight was being mocked for being sentimental. But this ain't sentimental. This is just nuts. This is just absolutely insane. And I think it is a real surprise to have the mask lift off Twilight and to have it be revealed as such a bizarre paranoia, really, about a young woman's expectations of marriage and life and sex, that I would have never guessed that this was the thing that so many people consumed and saw and apparently loved. But I didn't love this franchise, but I did love Breaking Dawn Part 2. It really is quite special. And so, yes, Brown Arrow.
Heads were being ripped off. Limbs were being torn. People were being set on fire. And my thought is, fucking A, recommend. I gotta say, I can't decide if I'm recommending it because it's good or if I'm recommending it because it's bad, but recommend.
Let me help you. It's bad.
and then, it's all a dream sequence.
It's always the best ending, right? When you're told everything that was exciting never happened and never will.
So no, fuck this movie. No. This is a Red Arrow fuck you movie. You screwed me.
Oh, Michael Sheen, though. His reaction.
Yes, that laugh he does. Woo!
Yeah, I mean, come on. You can't kill this movie. You can try, but it'll come back into your thoughts.
You don't got enough fire to kill this one.
You'll never forget this shit.
I will never forget being blueballed by Bella and friends, but I can't recommend this movie because the ending, which I'm like, it's too cheap. They don't have the money for what they're doing, but I give them credit for trying. Wait, they didn't even really try. It pissed me off. It just pissed me off. And maybe this does deserve the Brown Arrow treatment, but all I'm seeing is red from anger at that end scene. And so red I see, red it gets. And so my ranking on this, my only recommend in the whole saga, which was a Brown Arrow, was New Moon.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Why that one?
I found it quite amusing in all the wrong ways. With Bella trying to do all the self-harm, and with Edward being so stalkerish, and Jacob getting so cucked, it was just, I was laughing at that movie pretty hard. It was just so wrong. In the way Jacob says about Breaking Dawn Part 1, I can't believe this is what children are seeing and are thinking is good. But then I rank them Eclipse, Breaking Dawn Part 2, the original Twilight, and Breaking Dawn Part 1 was a dull piece of turd that never should be seen.
I mean, they're all kind of the same thing. I mean, they're all bad movies, but I do feel like because the ending was so spectacular, and let's not discount that Vampire Baseball.
Yes!
You watch the first one and you watch the last one, maybe the last two. You skip the ones in the middle, although, and this is the challenge, the ones in the middle are probably better made. I actually feel like they're better films, but they're not better to watch, if that makes any sense at all. If you're here for the Brown Arrow, 1 and 5, and skip everything in between.
Yeah, and for me, again, it's about really trying to understand something that is alien to me. I don't understand this culture. I don't understand why people like this. That's always intriguing to me. And so I think if you have that mindset, if you want to understand the weird things in pop culture, watch them all. But I would say if you want the shortcut, watch the first one and watch Breaking Dawn's Part 1 and 2. You could kind of skip the middle ones and still more or less follow along. But if I had to rank those, New Moon and then Eclipse, Eclipse was just boring to me. New Moon, again, there's some shocking stuff in there, like Bella trying to be sexually assaulted to get her boyfriend's attention. It's crazy. But yeah, I would say Twilight and the Breaking Dawn films, and you're good.
Eclipse is the one that literally has the least impact on anything. Nobody cares about Victoria, whether it be Bryce Dallas Howard or Rachel LaFerve. Nobody cared about that character and her newborns. You remove that entirely, and nothing changes. At the heart of it, this was about a young woman who was afraid of getting fucked by a vampire, but kind of wanted to do it. And so I feel like the stories that best reflect that are 1 and 5, and then, yeah, maybe 2, because that's where you get, although poor Jacob never was much of a rival, but you get the triangle as much as it is in New Moon. But that is it. We are done with Underworld. That has been going on concurrently on the main feed, and now we are done with Twilight. Which one did you like better? Just curious. Can you even say?
Oh, Twilight in a second.
Twilight. I apologize to our listeners for making them listen to the Underworld reviews. There's no fun in Underworld. Twilight, there's stuff to laugh at, and there's stuff that's almost competent. Twilight is the winner by far.
And it's the better Michael Sheen series.
Yeah, Twilight is more, is creative the right word? It goes in tangents I wasn't expecting. Whereas Underworld is every cliche you would imagine from an action film about vampires and werewolves. So maybe by being a straight action film, that's more your speed. But I do think Twilight has more surprises. And so for that reason alone, it's the one to do first and maybe the only one to do.
I don't know. I feel like we did get some other horror romances because of this. Maybe someday we'll get a chance to do Warm Bodies about a human and a zombie that fall in love. I really enjoyed that film. But yeah, I do think this kicked off a trend for a while with different mythological creatures hooking up with humans.
But this is the end of our spring summer donation drive, but we haven't announced what's on any feed, main or donation, for the rest of the year. So why don't, Stuart, you give our donors an insight into what is to come?
Da-da-da-da, bom-bom. Yes, let's do that. In just a couple weeks, we're going to be celebrating Halloween, believe it or not. We're at least starting our Addams Family retrospective with the TV show, right? You got to acknowledge the fact that it ran on TV with John Austin and all of that. Halloween with the new Addams Family, leading into the two live-action Barry Sonnenfeld, Raul Julia, Angelica Houston Addams Family. There was another one, believe it or not, with Tim Curry and Daryl Hannah, made for TV.
What?
And then apparently two Addams Family animated movies that have done pretty well recently.
Is this building up to a new Addams Family cartoon or something?
Well, they are doing a TV series on Netflix called Wednesday, and Christina Ricci is coming back to do it, but we won't cover that. But yeah, if stars align, that will be coming out at the same time. And If you become a patron in October, we will be covering, because we cover everything Rob Zombie, his take on the Munsters, which will be a good tie-in, I think.
Another TV monster family.
Assuming it comes out, that is.
Yeah, does anyone want it to come out?
All signs are pointing towards it, but no one's seeing the final product. It wouldn't surprise me if it was so terrible the studio just buried it.
I saw a teaser trailer and I don't want to see the final product.
Yeah, you say we cover all of Rob Zombie's work. There might be a time to break that habit.
Ooh, and this is coming from the Rob Zombie fan. All right. Well, if that's not your speed, we can talk about the end of the world. I mean, I think people are talking about it all the time. Crimes happening all over, laws being taken away, chaos in the street.
Yeah, Putin's ready to drop those nukes.
Yeah, I hear it all the time. We are living in a dystopia. But the truth of the matter is, we always feel that. And so we've got a retrospective to explore for 100 years, 100 years of dystopia. We're going to look at 10 films representing at least the story was created in every decade, starting from the 1920s to now, about how we always thought we were on the end times. And so we'll look at the ways we thought we were going to do ourselves in, starting in the 1920s with Metropolis. If you know that very famous...
Love it, yeah.
Yeah, science fiction. It ended up getting colorized and with a Queen soundtrack. I might have to hunt that one down. But Metropolis, Brave New World, 1984, Fahrenheit 451, Soylent Green, some George Lucas with THX-1138, Brazil, which is sort of like 1984 as a Monty Python comedy, Waterworld, which... I like. I know that was a hated movie from the 90s.
Yeah, it's popular to hate that, but I feel like it's making a comeback.
Yeah, it's Road Warrior on water, and that's kind of fun. Children of Men, love that one. And then Snowpiercer, which had Chris Evans in a Bong Joon-ho movie set on a train.
This is a list of movies I've been meaning to watch forever. I've never seen any of these films except Soylent Green.
Really? Wow, well, how fun for you, because I do think all of them... If not all of them are classics, they are at least based on books that are classics. And I do think that they, again, all had something to say about the times and how people thought we were dooming ourselves. Whether the movies are good or not, it'll be fun to take a look at a retrospective about dystopia. And if you want a little bit more craziness, a little bit more end times, maybe we'll die by bees. For platinum level, we are going to, for the midwinter, we're going to cover Wicker Man. It is a trilogy, believe it or not. We have the 1970s movie with Christopher Lee that many people will tell you is a horror classic.
It's a musical.
It is maybe less horrific or more horrific, depending on your take on musicals. I agree. They made a direct sequel called Wicker Tree. And then, of course, very famously, Nick Cage made a remake.
Guys, he's going to dropkick a beer. It's amazing.
I actually think the movie is amazing. And because we just want to have some fun, it is midwinter. We're also going to throw in there a movie very similar to The Wicker Man, Midsommar. Came out a couple of years ago by the guy that made Hereditary. And I think people wanted to hear us talk about it. We're going to just have four films for platinum level coming out in November.
Yeah, it's quite a fall package because normally we do five silver films. We're doing six. Normally we do... about seven gold films, we're doing 10. Normally we do three platinum films, we're doing four.
Mm-hmm. Supersized.
But on the main feed, we've got some other stuff coming up. We're doing a unofficial Arnold Schwarzenegger series here. We're just going to cover a lot of Arnold one-offs.
His action movies. Not his comedy, sorry. No Kindergarten Cop. Skipping all of that shit. We want to look at why he was the last action hero of the millennium. And to do that, we're going to start with Commando, the movie he made after The Terminator, and follow him all the way to a movie that I've always wanted to cover, End of Days, the movie he made right there in 1999 when he stopped being a box office phenomenon and went to be the governor of California.
Instead of bombing in the theaters, he's going to bomb in the state of California.
Anyway, so that means Commando, Raw Deal, Red Heat,
woohoo!
Last Action Hero, True Lies, that's James Cameron. Want to revisit that one. Eraser, which I've never seen. I think that's the only one on there I haven't seen.
I have problems with that movie. Existential problems.
Ooh, I like existential problems. And then End of Days, which is also very problematic, but in a good way.
And then in between that, we have a lot of new releases to review. DC League of Super Pets, those trailers are everywhere.
We need to review the cartoon with animals.
Yeah, this is exactly why we shouldn't cover everything, but we do.
Predator Prey, coming out on Hulu.
Yeah, we've already covered Predator, so it's not going to be part of the Arnold action series. You can already hear our thoughts on that. But yeah, they are on movie number 5, I think, if you don't count AVP.
Yeah, if you don't count the AVPs.
I don't.
And then there's a reboot of Salem's Lot coming out. And of course, Halloween Ends, Black Adam, Black Panther Wakanda Forever. How do you have a Black Panther movie without Black Panther? This is a question.
And Rocky, what would this be now? 11? Creed 3? What are we calling this?
Creed 3.
Yeah, it'll be another one of those. Avatar 2. We got a lot of things, big movies really coming back, big franchises in the second half of 2022.
And it's all because of supporters like you that makes this possible for us to do. So thank you for your support, whatever level you went this year. And this fall, we do have a couple of returning retrospective series as well. Looks like we're going to be adding to our M. Night retrospective series.
Oh, no.
M. Night, I'm always excited whenever he's producing a new film. Something about a knock on a cabin, which I'm ready to knock it.
And speaking of knocks on cabins, it's likely Evil Dead Rising is going to be coming out sometime soon.
Yep, we're counting on that anyway. It's finished, and it's set for HBO Max, so should be able to happen.
And then maybe some others are going to pop back up as well. Sequels are made, but not released, so...
Yeah, we always have our eyes on release schedules and calendars, and these days it can be very hard to know when new movies are coming out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Children of the Corn film waiting to drop.
I've been waiting for 2 years on, yeah, the next Children of the Corn, and there's some other ones I'm hanging on that could pop up on there. Garbage Day could come around again. We can all hope, but whatever chooses to materialize or not, it does look like we're going to have a lot of returns to some great franchises.
So thank you so much for your support. I hope you're able to join us maybe on the Patreon feed next week for our review of Nope, or in a couple of weeks when we start our fall donation. Thank you so much for joining us during this Twilight retrospective series. Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. And until next time, gotta go, got a vampire to kill.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. I won't come back. And you can go on with your life without any interference from me. It'll be like I never existed, I promise. I'm just sorry I let this go on for so long.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing.
I can read every mind in this room. Money. Sex. Money. Sex. Cat.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
I'm never gonna get enough of this. We don't get tired. We don't have to rest or catch our breath or eat. I mean, how are we gonna stop?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
I'm glad I amuse you.
Go to NowPlayingPodcast.com each week to hear our hosts review the original novels on which these movies are based.
You're not really into this, are you?
I actually really just want to go to this bookstore.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
But I can't help myself. You are so mouth-watering.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm down with the kids.
Oh yeah, dude. You're the bomb.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
Like my own personal brand of heroin.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Bella, they're not even alive. It makes me sick. Better you really be dead than one of them.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Everything about me invites you in. My voice, my face, even my smell.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Nganza Media Incorporated.
Can't trust vampires. Trust me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I have to report a crime. The Collins. They've done something terrible.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
Oh, you see, there's no law broken here.
Agreed. But does it then follow that there is no danger?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I have never met anyone more prone to life-threatening idiocy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
My time as a human was over. But I never felt more alive.
But this is where we can really, yes, lay on thick all of the pageantry. We see everyone and every cunt contributor from all the movies.
Every cunt.
I'll say it again.
Every character from the Lord of the Rings trilogy appear at the end credits. They do that here.
Sorry, Rachel LaFerve, though. There is only Bryce Dallas Howard credited as Victoria. Like, you have been wiped from this. You were in two movies. And you get nothing.
She wasn't credited when they show all three of them.
Did they?
Yeah, they showed all three of those vampires from the first one together. And then they showed Bryce Dallas Howard alone.
Would someone have to look? I don't know. I didn't see her. I just saw Bryce Dallas Howard alone.
Yeah, let me look. I got the file here.
All right, I take it back. If Rachel LaFerve got her shout out, then... I mean, they should. I mean, yeah. For Christ's sake, two movies. That's why I was so surprised.
These credits go on forever, though. I could understand.
Yeah, it's towards the end. It's before you get to Jacob. It's right before, like, the major players.
Randall, Peter, Charlotte, Liam, Shivam, Maggie, Tia.
We all love Tia.
Amun, Kebby, Senna, Safrina, Benjamin, Vladimir, Stefan.
Does Toshiro get a call out? The Japanese vampire that shows up for 30 seconds?
The Japanese vampire that got killed.
Alistair, Irina, Carmen, Eleazar, Kate, Tanya, Garrett, Jay Jenks, Coor.
I don't even remember half these characters.
Most of these people were the people from part two.
Yes.
Like, we're just the people that showed up randomly.
I think the end credits start with the Irish vampires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all love Siobhan.
Here we go. Cam Giadette as James. Edie Gathegi as Laurent. Rachelle Lafiere as Victoria.
Oh, they do call her out.
Oh, she got it. All right, you can cut it. All right, she got her moment then. I missed her moment, but... she got one.
Yeah, because I was shocked because they showed all three together and then they showed Bryce Dallas Howard later. And so I was like, wait, did they credit the same character twice?
They did. They did the right thing.